Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, the latest on health and healing, living a longer life, and including 5 simple steps to detoxifying your body of disease-causing mercury and heavy metals. And almost everyone that I counsel has lots of heavy metals, and we have to get them out of their system. So I'll show you how that's done. Then, does thinking too hard wear you out? If it does, it's all in your head, and I'll explain that. Also, today we'll talk about grape seeds. I mentioned it yesterday and what it can do. Well, there's more. And how a vegan form of iron, vegetables that are rich in iron and blood-building nutrients, can help protect against PMS. And exercise could fortify the immune system against future cancers. We have a lot to share. Always some peer-reviewed literature. My guest in the second part of our program is going to talk about a very important topic. And this is one of the most popular areas that people say when they're giving us feedback that they like about the program. That you don't hear the same old guest. I mean, just look at Fox. Whoever's on Hannity, you're going to hear on O'Reilly more often than not, and Van Susteren, and they're all the same. The same is true on MSNBC, the same boring talking heads with the same, you know, good soldier, you know, corporate, liberal, corporate Democrat philosophy. Nothing new, nothing empowering, nothing. It's like a wasteland. Today, learning to emotionally and spiritually navigate ourselves through the coming chaos and collapse of industrial civilization. How's that for a mind twist? Dr. Carolyn Baker, professor in history and psychology, and an expert on how we understand crisis in peak oil and structural cracks in our free market capitalist system and the U.S. domestic and foreign policies from psycho-spiritual perspectives. So this will be a very interesting discussion. My suggestion, let your friends know that we're going to talk about this because I know a lot of people don't know what to do, where to go, how to prepare. We'll share with you all that insight. Learning to emotionally and spiritually navigate ourselves through the coming chaos and collapse of industrial civilization, which is inevitable. Then from our public health segment today, do you have back pain? How about hot flashes? Good, because Big Pharma hopes you have those, because it's got some drugs to sell you. Also today, if time permits, I'm not sure it will, but a commentary on the worst part of being homeless, No One Sees You, by Alicia Figuerella from Alternet. Also, a brief comment. I'm holding off an in-depth original investigative report on the New York Times and on reporting about the so-called miraculous HIV-infected cured baby. I will completely deconstruct their arguments and show you how bad and compliant reporting is at these media bastions of what integrity? I think not. But I'll share a few insights today on that. We have a lot to do. Let's begin. One of the very first steps we should all take when we want to be healthier is to detoxify. Now, there are many different ways. Most are very good. So you have to select the different wet methods for your own detoxification. I always recommend multiple. For example, if you are physically able and don't have any underlying problems, then saunas are good, but not the kind of long saunas that have been advocated. Those are actually dangerous. I suggest not very high temperatures, but high enough to get a good sweat going for about a half hour. And to hydrate yourself before you go in, and most importantly, have an electrolyte drink when you're actually in there, so that you have the electrolytes, like sodium chloride and potassium from citrate and different other nutrients that will protect you, so you sweat out the toxins. I also believe that we should, and a lot of people start seeing the toxins come in excess mucus. Person says, Gary, I don't understand. I'm suddenly my nose is flowing. I got phlegm coming up out of my throat. That's correct, because that's one of the ways the body eliminates toxins. But getting rid of the heavy metals is a challenge. It requires a little more effort. You're not going to get rid of the heavy metals by drinking some brew with some bentonite clay in it. You can drink all the green tea in the world. It's not going to get rid of lead, mercury, and cadmium. Now, consider that we're breathing air, and that air contains pollutants, even if you're not in the middle of a chemtrail. By the way, I'm going to be doing a whole discussion on chemtrails. But let's say you're getting aluminum and barium and cadmium. Those are all bad. And then you have what you don't see, particulate matter, depending upon where you live, from coal-burning power plants. And that is causing a lot of mercury in the air. But then you can go to a dentist and you can get a silver filling. That gives you mercury, and that's going to stay with you for a long time, because every time you eat, every time you drink something, toxic vapors of mercury are going into your body. And then let's just accept that we are always around pollutants. You eat fish, you're going to end up with mercury. You eat sushi, lots of mercury. Vaccines, flu vaccine, an enormous amount of mercury, 24 micrograms. And that goes directly into your blood. So what do? First, the easiest, simplest thing you can do, drink filtered water, pure water. It is extremely important. No fluoride. You don't want the fluoride, because that can pass the blood-brain barrier, and it's toxic. So you want good, clean water. That's first up. And then add something to the water after about a week of drinking more water than you normally would. You'll be urinating, but you're also carrying right out of the body toxins. Then start with herbal teas, preferably teas that are known to be very strong, putting cinnamon and clove into the tea. And that will help also. Black tea is very good at detoxing. Then after you do 3 glasses of tea a day, then the next week, start using juices. I would suggest a juice that emphasizes garlic, raw garlic. Now, it's a little strong, so you have to dilute it. So let's say you put a bulb of garlic into a juicer, but also put some cilantro in there, because cilantro is one of the most powerful herbs for grabbing on to heavy metal, including mercury, and getting it out of the body. Don't have a juicer, not a problem, just eat it. But you can juice a lot more than what you can eat. Then add in a teaspoon of chlorella. Chlorella and spirulina have both been shown to help in detoxification from heavy metals. They're both micro-specific. They are chlorophylls, single-cell chlorophylls. Very good natural chelators. Then add in, maybe for lunch or dinner, some fermented food. For example, you could drink some sauerkraut juice. That's very good for you. Or eat some sauerkraut. Or have some fermented veggies. Or have some vegan kefirs. All of that helps with detoxification. The probiotics are what you're doing. And if you can't do any of that, just take some probiotic capsules. That will help as well. The more probiotic bacteria you get into your body, the more you're going to rebalance from the adverse effects of having bad bacteria caused by heavy metals. Then, of all the fruits I know, the one that I would use would be grapefruits. Grapefruits are specific for helping get heavy metals out of the body. But I would add in lemons and limes, including the skin and the seeds. The pectins in the rinds, and by the way, you have pectins in the rinds of all citrus fruits. It's what's called a modified citrus pectin. It has strong heavy metal detoxification capacities, and that's been proven in clinical trials. But you go to drink one, and when I'm at home in Florida, I have 2 to 3 pure glasses of juice a day, mainly lemon. Now, I'm used to drinking 16-ounce glass of lemon juice. Most people, their lips would pucker inside out. Their whole face would go inside out. And you'd have to be peeling them off the ceiling. But you develop a tolerance for it. What you do, you start off with maybe 2 lemons, 2 limes, and 1 grapefruit. And then you dilute that with some spring water. And then add in a teaspoon of Manuka honey and stir it around. Therefore, it's completely palatable. And then you want to get it more and more of the juice and less of the water. Until one day, you can take your grapefruit, lemon and lime, and juice it and drink it down. Remember, the skin is where the healing happens. So when you add all this together, you've got 5 different means of getting heavy metals out of the body that are inexpensive, easy to do, may in some cases take a little creative adjustment, where you can say, okay, I don't like the taste of that much garlic. What can I add in? Well, add parsley in. That'll break the taste of the garlic. And besides, parsley's great to detoxify with in any case. So that's an easy way we can all get started detoxifying our bodies. Frequently, I sit for long periods of time and write. I write 2 ways. I write in longhand, and I write by dictating. I carry a little portable microphone, so when I'm on a plane, or which sometimes might be hours, I'm always writing. And then when I'm finished, I don't go out for a long run or a heavy workout because it's exhausting. I've used a lot of energy. I'm sure many of you have read a very important book, not a book that you have to learn from, or you've done something that takes a lot of focus, like a crossword puzzle, something you've had to prepare for, like an exam, and you feel exhausted afterwards. There's a reason for that based upon a new study that goes into the brain and examines what happens in the brain. Now, keep in mind, the brain is relatively small compared to the rest of the body weight. It's 1/50th. Of our body weight, but it consumes up to 1/4 of the body glucose and 1/5 of the body oxygen. That's an awful lot of energy in the cerebrum. And if you do too much work, you can feel lethargic. You can feel drained. So what they did, they found out at the University of Kent, where they were examining people, and based upon non-mentally challenging computer games and challenging ones like puzzles, one group would watch their computer, play on the computer, and feel no draining at all. Another group did the same thing, and they felt exhausted, mentally exhausted. It's because there is a correlation. It also affects other aspects of the body, but it doesn't affect our blood pressure, doesn't affect our cardiac output, doesn't affect our cardiovascular response. It's just when your brain's tired, the rest of you is tired as well. That's why after you do something that's really intellectually taxing, give yourself a short break, like a half-hour break. Meditation would be great. Then that re-energizes the brain, and that allows you to feel better. For almost 50 years, Americans have been using pesticides on their lawns, even at one time, and I'm sure many of the baby boomers will remember this, you go into a baby's room, and above the crib there'd be pest strips, and those were loaded with pesticides. You thought, you know, this is good, it's trapping the flies so they don't land on the baby. No one told you that they were outgassing. People would spray their lawns all over the place. never thinking that this could be toxic. I remember when Adele Davis developed her cancer, and we were on a tour with our separate publishers, but we were on the same tour. And we had a long opportunity for talking, and she was this wonderfully soothing, very positive woman who was enormously influential because the average American just associated with her. She looked like and sounded like everyone's good grandmother, the grandmother that everybody wants. And she looked that way, too. She was overweight and very positive. She had a background in nursing. But then she developed cancer, and it's the cancer that would kill her. And she told me, she said, "I know exactly how I got this cancer." And I said, "How?" She said there was a period of time when they were doing all this spraying around my house, and I could smell that. I started to get sick, and I closed the windows, but it was too late. And for days, I was breathing all this in. And at that time, by the way, we did not have all the knowledge we have now about the dangers of pesticides. People don't know that story, but that's an actual reason she believes she developed cancer. This comes from the University of Granada in Spain. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal Environmental Research. Quote, "Environmental health scientists have discovered a link between type 2 diabetes and pesticides. The results could explain the significant increase in health conditions in the last few years. The investigators found people with higher concentrations of DDE, a pesticide, are 400% more likely to develop type 2 diabetes. Additionally, exposure to a chemical found in the common pesticide lindanol also increased the risk of developing diabetes. Quote, the mechanisms of actions by which chemicals increase the risk of diabetes is unknown. However, some researchers have suggested pesticides might cause an immunological response when they penetrate estrogen receptors in tissues associated with metabolism of sugars. End quote. One more reason that you shouldn't be using any artificial pesticides at all. Not around your home. And for those of you who live on golf courses, whoa, just be aware of this. Yes, there's lots of advantages living in a gated community out in Arizona or in West Palm Beach or Fort Myers or Naples or all the other places. The numbers are staggering. I have two sets of numbers. One shows 17 million Americans living in gated communities. Another shows upwards of 30 million Americans living in gated communities. And they generally have golf courses and tennis clubs and restaurants and lots of social activities. And for a lot of people, a safe, wholesome environment where their favorite hobby is readily available and they can engage in it and have neighbors of a similar mindset, I can certainly appreciate the importance of that. However, understand this. More pesticides are sprayed on golf courses than any other area of non-commercial use land. So you're getting an enormous amount of pesticide in the air, and it doesn't go away. So my suggestion, get yourself a pesticide or heavy metal blood workup, hair workup, and see how much you have in your body, because that can lead to cancer. And finally, proper eating improves dementia and physical and mental health. Now, this is from mainstream medicine. This is reported in Medical News Today and published in the peer-reviewed journal, the Journal of Advanced Nursing. And here's what it says. Quote, dementia patients who are given an educational program to help them remember proper eating habits not only improve their physical health, but their mental health as well. The patients who receive the intervention are less likely to show depressive symptoms half a year later. Well, that's good. Now let me tell you something better. Recently, I had to do an intervention. I was asked to do an intervention with someone I've known for a long time and who has not lived a healthy life and had hit rock bottom. But what concerned the family, and the father, mother in particular, was dementia. Saying the same thing 5 or 10 times in a row, just one after the other, but not remembering that they had just said the same thing. And the father was just overwhelmed with fear that his son would become like his wife, who has Alzheimer's. And he, in his mid-80s, is having to take care of his wife. And that's an enormous challenge. And he said, the psychiatrists say there's nothing done. The neurologists say nothing can be done. We put on some meds. But it's inevitable that this is going to happen. You've known him for a long time. You've been a friend. Can you help him? I said, sure. So I took some time from my filming, and I worked with him day and night. And the good news is, in only 18 days, he no longer is repeating himself at all. And before, he wouldn't remember a single thing you said 10 minutes after you said it. Now he can remember complete conversations from a day before and is making improvement. So now he is with his parents, with a protocol, and another friend who is going to be there working with him each day. So when I hear good news from mainstream science that they're able to help dementia patients, it's all relative. They think it's great if they simply slow down the progression of disease. I believe it's great news when we reverse the disease. We know how to reverse brain damage. We know how to help people reverse diseases that science simply says is not possible. But just like with AIDS, they're doing all this worldwide publicity, headlines everywhere, about a baby that they think no longer has HIV or AIDS. They're not sure because they have none of the blood work up from the mother originally, and they're just flying in the wind. I'll tell you why it's all so stupid. But when they had a chance for 5 years, 20 hours a day, 7 days a week, to come and sit and talk with people with advanced AIDS who are being cared for by a team of 24 medical staff at my center in New York. And all the protocols were my protocols. I was there every day. I was there 18 hours a day, if you remember. And these were people who were at death's door coming in and filled with life and improvement going out. And 12 of them who decided to be on an advanced protocol, which was extremely rigorous. It required them to get therapy 6 days a week, 5 hours a day. That's a lot of time to be in therapy, but they did it. All 12 reversed their HIV and AIDS completely and stayed HIV and disease free and were in optimal health. Their medical records, the physicians, all were there. When on Tony Brown's journal, he had his medical team review it all before they came on, medical records, blood workups, everything. Not a single member of the American media dared touch that story, dared to come to the press conference where 100 of these improved people, not just my 12 people were there, but another 88 people from around the United States were there with their physicians and medical records. Not a single member of the American media wanted to come. To me, that showed the total complete fraud of everything in the AIDS establishment, from the gay activists who were shilling and pimping for Big Pharma, so they get their grants and let me in the door, to the pharmacist who would have an unlimited income, the professors, the scientists for hire. Everybody started feeding at that trough and wasting lives, causing innumerable people to die who wouldn't have had to. On the other end, we were saving lives. You wouldn't know that because that's not how we face reality in our society. Now, I did mention that high iron intake may help protect against PMS. A little more on that. According to the latest in research at University of Massachusetts, Amherst and Harvard, a study that looked at 3,000 women and followed them over 10 years, quote, we found that women who consumed the most non-heme iron, the form primarily in plant foods and in supplements, had a 40% lower risk of developing PMS than women who consumed the lowest amount of non-heme iron. That's good. That's excellent. That was published in the American Journal of Epidemiology. So what's the takeaway message here? The takeaway message is, when you're doing a glass of juice and you're using your celery and broccoli and kale and parsley and cabbage, you're getting your non-animal heme. You're getting the good ferrous fumarate. You're getting the one that doesn't promote heart disease. You're getting the healthy form of iron and enriching your blood, and that's all to the good. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. About 10 minutes now, learning to emotionally and spiritually navigate ourselves through the coming chaos and collapse of industrial civilization with Dr. Carolyn Baker. But, as promised, from Martha Rosenberg. Recently, quote, some of the nation's top researchers, clinicians, and scientists convened in Washington, D.C. for the first annual Selling Sickness Conference, examining how pharma sells diseases to move the medications intended to treat them. Examples of pharma's disease-mongering business model abound, especially since direct-to-consumer advertising began in the 1990s. Depression, bipolar disorder, seasonal allergies, insomnia, gastroenteritis, reflux disease, GERD, are just some of the diseases that tripled and quadrupled in the population thanks to TV advertising, sometimes accompanied by self-administered quizzes. Even more lucrative have been childhood and adult ADHD, a sort of behavioral mood and spectrum disorders, like, do you sleep too much? Are you too wakeful? Disorders, and of course, restless leg syndrome. Cha-ching. Proof of pharma's disease selling model is as close as investment reports which unabashedly gush about growing, quote, markets for fibromyalgia or depression. And 2013 reveals that the market for ankylosis and spondylosis is unfolding now that Abbott has dedicated an entire company to sell its extreme drug, Humira. Do you have back pain? Are you dismissing it as a result of lifting too much at the gym or bad posture? Ask Abbott radio ads. Instead of spending $5 a month on aspirin, you could be spending $20,000 a year on Humira and exposing yourself to tuberculosis and serious viruses and fungi or bacterial infection. Why would people voluntarily take a drug that, quote, may increase the chance of getting lymphoma, including a rare kind, or other cancers, hepatitis B infections, in carriers of the virus, allergic reactions, nervous system problems, blood problems, heart failure, certain immune reactions, including lupus-like syndrome, liver problems, and worsening cirrhosis, end quote. Side effects that are worse than the condition being treated. Some people have died from these infections, says the label. Why? Simple. Advertising works. ADHD has been another lucrative disease for Big Pharma. Though marketers worry about the 5 million kids at risk of going off their ADHD meds when they leave home. Quote, I remember being the kid with ADHD. Truth is, I still have it, said an ad from stimulant maker Shear, with a photo of Adam Levine, the lead singer of Maroon 5, in the Northwestern University student newspaper, the Daily Northwestern. Quote, it's your ADHD, own it, is the tagline. This week, a widely disseminated press release furthers the ADHD financial damage control by announcing research that reveals that, quote, ADHD can often persist into adulthood. News outlets obediently headline their articles, ADHD doesn't go away, and ADHD often persists into adulthood, without even noting the financial partnership between Shire and the study's lead organization, Boston Children's Hospital, penned just 4 months ago. Finally, there's the lucrative disease of menopause, which made pharma billions until the mino drugs, Premarin and Prempro, were found to cause endometrial cancer and breast cancer, respectively. This week, an FDA advisory committee continues the unsavory tradition of over-medicating a non-disease by considering another drug, including Paxil, for, quote, treatment of moderate to severe vasomuscular symptoms due to menopause, end quote. How safe are these drugs? Both our maker Pfizer and Paxil maker GlaxoSmithKline settled major lawsuits over buried risks related to the drugs and faced many others. One Paxil study that hid risks was written by GlaxoSmithKline marketing firm, not the credited doctors on the article. The doctors were paid to put their name on the article, but the actual article written by PR hacks in some little cubicle someplace in some fed little disgusting hole that Big Pharma works from. This is all according to the court proceedings brought by the New York Attorney General. It's easy to blame Big Pharma, a bought FDA, bought medical institutions, and rubber stamp press for promotion of expensive and dangerous drugs for non-diseases. But at what point do we decide that we are not going to buy into their business? Excuse me. Did I say business model? Yeah, but we're supposed to say medical model. But that would be lying. We suffer from a business model. ADHD is a fraud. Social anxiety disorder is a double fraud. And everything else that they try to sell us today, your baby, it's laughing, it's crying. Look at that. Bipolar. Get it on drugs. Aren't babies supposed to laugh and cry? Yes, no, excuse me. Did I say yes? No. Business model. I'm the doctor. No, I'm not the doctor. Why do I keep... I'm the publicist, and I'm trying to convince you that if your baby laughs and cries, it needs to go on meds. Now, you're supposed to be the typical stupid, brain-dead American who'll do anything you're told. After all, you think it's fascinating to look at a woman who's got a 75-foot-wide ass, Kim Kardashian, and you make that a household name. So why can't you just go ahead and shut up and accept the fact that your baby's got bipolar and get them on this drug immediately to save their life? And if you don't, Hillary Clinton will. How about that? Sounds all right to me. No, it doesn't. Oh, what about that Obamacare health insurance? Oh, we got to raise the rates now because we're going to be on more meds and more diagnosis and more diseases, and it's going to cost more. And you're going to have your premiums raised. But I'm a poor person. I thought, well, too bad. Again, you have to understand that when Obama business model was created, it was created by business people from big pharma, big profit corporations, and big insurance companies meeting privately in the White House. They own it, so why not meet there instead of their boardrooms to figure out the best way for them to make about $1 trillion in excess profit that they wouldn't be making. Now, it doesn't mean anyone's going to be healthier. It's not going to prevent a single disease. It's going to cause more death than it would have otherwise had. But it's a business model. It's that simple. So the next time someone really gaffes and says, we've got a medical or scientific model, have them stop for a moment. We don't. The only thing we have in America are business models that we then disguise, thinking that we're all stupid. We're not. We're all compliant. We're not. Back in a moment.
We'll be right back.
everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Before we go to my guest who's standing by, and I've given you her bio earlier in the program, Dr. Carolyn Baker, learning to emotionally and spiritually navigate ourselves through the coming chaos and collapse of industrial civilization, we just want to hear from one of our INS office individuals, Jeremy, who's looking for a little help on a project. Hi, Jeremy.
Good afternoon, Gary. So we're currently in the process of archiving some documentary footage, and we're looking for some interns who may be able to donate a bit of their time on weekdays or weeknights until 9 p.m. or even on weekends during the day to help out in the effort. So anyone who's interested, they can give me a call at the following number, and that is 646-926-5434. Once again, that number is 646-926-5434.
And thank you, Jeremy.
Absolutely. We'd really appreciate the help.
Let's say hello to Dr. Baker. Nice to have you with us today from Colorado. Hi, Carolyn Baker?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
This is Carolyn.
Carolyn, before we start, I thought you'd like to hear from someone who I know you're aware of his work, Dr. Rupert Sheldrake, talking about science delusion. And then we'll segue directly from his short statements into our discussion, all right?
Okay, sounds good.
The science delusion is the belief that science already understands the nature of reality in principle, leaving any of the details to be filled in. Now, a lot of people think that's true. I certainly don't. I think we know a lot, but there's a huge amount we don't know. And in this book, what I do is I take the 10 dogmas of science, and I turn these dogmas into questions. So I look at them to see how well they stand up to scientific examination in the light of scientific evidence. And the answer is, none of them do. And the point of the book is not anti-science, is pro-science. I think when we break out of these dogmatic assumptions, then science becomes much more interesting. All sorts of new research becomes possible. All sorts of new questions open up. And so that's really what my book's about. It's an attempt to set science free, as the American title says, from these dogmatic assumptions.
Indeed, and there are about 10 of them in the book, of course, but maybe we can discuss some of the most, I guess, powerful assumptions of science, if that's an easy job to do, Rupert, to kind of distill it even more.
Well, they're all powerful in their own way. I mean, I could summarize them. Should I do that?
Sure, let's do that.
What we're talking about.
It's a good idea.
Well, dogma one is the assumption that nature is mechanical or machine-like, that everything in nature is like a machine. Animals are like machines, plants are like machines, and we're like machines, lumbering robots, in Richard Dawkins' vivid phrase. Our brains are like genetically programmed computers. So that's the first assumption that's been in science since the 17th century. The second assumption is matter is unconscious. The whole universe is made up of unconscious matter. All of nature is made of unconscious matter. Our bodies are made of unconscious matter. But for some peculiar reason, our brains become conscious. And that is one of the big problems for materialist science. Consciousness ought not to exist at all. The third assumption is the laws of nature are fixed. They were the same at the moment of the Big Bang as they are today, and they'll be the same forever. And so are the constants, which is why they're called constant, things like the speed of light and the gravitational constant. The fourth assumption, the total amount of matter and energy is always the same. It all came into being at the Big Bang. It's been the same ever since, and it'll be the same forever. The fifth assumption is that nature is purposeless. There are no purposes in animals or plants or in life as a whole. And the entire evolutionary process has no purpose. It's just come about by blind chance and the laws of nature. Assumption six, biological inheritance is material. It's all genetic or epigenetic or possibly in cytoplasmic inheritance, but in any case, material. Dogma 7, memories are stored as material traces inside the brain. All your memories are inside your head in some way, stored in nerve endings or phosphorylated proteins. Or no one knows quite how, but the assumption is they're all in the brain. Almost all educated people have this as their default worldview because it is the standard view of modern science. But what I show in my book is that when we question these assumptions, every single one of them turns out to be just an assumption. And most of them were put in place in science in the 17th century, some in the 19th century. But in many ways, science has outgrown these old assumptions, and the sciences themselves have burst out of them, but most people don't realize that yet.
That's just a brief understanding that here we have a profoundly insightful human being who says, let's begin to look at things differently. And he's up against a rigidified establishment that refuses to accept that there should be change, even though change is happening all around us. So here is my issue for you to discuss, if you would please, Carolyn. The great American anthropologist Robert Redfield, who passed away in the 1950s, once said that although the human race and our civilization had made great strides in technology and in establishing an economic and scientific order, it has made no progress in creating a moral order, which he defined as the development and passing down of knowledge about how to live a righteous and meaningful life. He was rather prophetic because he believed that this moral void predicted a grim future ahead for modern American civilization. And Arthur Koestler and Lewis Mumford likewise had predicted similar bleak futures due to our overemphasis on technology and ignoring our higher principles. And while we know that the dominant paradigm today puts all of its eggs into the scientific and technological basket to solve our problems and crisis, how do you see this view being short-sighted, and what do you envision a new moral order looking like?
Well, that was quite an introduction of our topic matter. It was good to hear from Rupert Sheldrake. I'm a big fan. You know, what concerns me is that we're living in unprecedented times, and unprecedented times call for unprecedented consciousness. We cannot navigate this daunting future that we're facing with the old tools of reason and logic. Now, certainly we need those to solve problems and make practical decisions, but I'm sure we've all noticed that it's getting more difficult and challenging every day emotionally to just live our lives. And if it's this challenging now, we can only imagine how challenging it's going to be when many of the centralized systems and infrastructure that we've come to rely on aren't there anymore. So we stand, I believe, as a species at an evolutionary threshold in which we're being compelled to become a new kind of human being. And the way that we do this has both a downside and an upside. The downside is that, as Carl Jung said, consciousness is not one, that's W-O-N, without great suffering. Many indigenous prophecies talk about a purification that humankind is now beginning to pass through that is going to break us down but ultimately remake us. And the upside is that we can even now begin to grasp our evolutionary destiny by understanding that the story we're currently living is the old, outdated story of the isolated human who's separated from the rest of the Earth community. And we're being compelled to create a new story, which is the story of the universe in which every atom of the universe is connected with every other. So that's where I would begin to answer your question.
Good. I appreciate that. What do you observe as being the primary indicators of a social and political and economic collapse today? And why do you feel, as do a growing number of us, that it is well past the time when our civilization can prevent the unraveling of our socio-economic and political and fossil fuel-based culture, and more technology is not the solution, yet that is the only place that our managers, those who are the power brokers, are looking only for a technological cure, and hence everyone is kind of staying in their lifestyles without any effort or any urgency to look elsewhere, to move, to understand themselves in a larger context?
Well, you know, for a number of years, I have been focused on the three E's, energy, environment, and economics, as the most formidable challenges that we're facing. But this last year, as many millions of other people have recognized, climate change is really, really in our faces. And in January, I believe it was, I decided to sit down and kind of coordinate a number of scientific articles and YouTube presentations on climate change, kind of the best of the best. And I wrote an article called The Sixth Great Extinction, which is on my website at carolynbaker.net. You can also Google it, Sixth Great Extinction by Carolyn Baker. And in there you will find some of the best science that's available to us right now on climate change. I see this as something that is overriding almost everything else. Certainly, you know, back in 2002, we began talking about peak oil. There are a number of folks trying to debunk that hypothesis at the moment, but it continues to hold. Some of the great scholars like Richard Hindberg, Colin Campbell, I consider their work impeccable on peak oil. But that seems to have a longer-reaching consequence. However, it is somewhat connected with the current economic situation and the economic collapse that we began to face in 2008, which seems to be worsening by the moment. And then you put that together with climate change, and you have this interaction of three huge crises that really cannot be simplistically solved by technology, and certainly cannot be solved with, you know, this whole 17th century Enlightenment perspective that Rupert Sheldrake was talking about. So I think that, you know, you have to be kind of brain dead not to see that we're in the process of not just the collapse of industrial civilization, but the paradigm on which it is built.
I agree. You don't have to be brain dead, but you can easily be distracted.
Yes.
Which gives the same outcome.
Absolutely. And the terror of really looking at this is so huge that for many people, they prefer to follow, you know, keep up with the Kardashians, as you've been talking about, and, you know, and keep their minds there, keep their heads in the sand, because it's really scary stuff to deal with. And if you decide to deal with it, then you have to make a lot of other decisions.
Well, one of your premises is that while many individuals will be able to physically navigate it, dramatic civilization, peak oil, and environmental collapse, many will be unable to because they are not emotionally prepared for dealing with the kinds of crisis on the horizons. Here's what you wrote. I'll quote this for the audience. Without adequate emotional and spiritual preparation for the collapse of industrial civilization, the human psyche is very likely to be overwhelmed to the point of madness or death. Collapse is humanity's next rite of passage, our imminent initiation into adulthood as a species. So expand on this further, and what is required to become emotionally and spiritually prepared and to hold on to the higher spiritual qualities of our humanity?
Well, you know, as a former psychotherapist, I guess it was about 2007, as I began to really understand that collapse is what is happening, and, you know, I had for years and years studied a lot of isolated events, but not had a framework for those. And then I was able to put it all together in a framework of, oh, this really spells the collapse of industrial civilization. Okay, so there are, you know, teeming numbers of websites out there telling us how to prepare logistically. But as a former therapist, I'm thinking, my goodness, you know, how are people going to navigate this emotionally? And I began to understand the psychological ramifications of a society unraveling and how emotionally unprepared most Americans are for a long-term decline of our society, like the collapse of infrastructure, economic collapse, the panic and terror that might ensue as people find themselves without power or without food and water, without basic necessities. So I began to imagine the emotional challenges to humans in a world unraveling, and I wanted to invite people to look at these psychological realities and, most importantly, give them the tools for doing so. So in 2009, I published Sacred Demise, Walking the Spiritual Path of Industrial Civilization's Collapse. And I expected that I might sell maybe 20 books and most people would run from the title. But what surprised me was the success of the book and how the truth it expounded resonated with so many people as if amid the culture's denial and trying to put a happy face on demise, people were hungry and thirsty for the truth. So in the meantime, I was very influenced by the transition movement, which began in the UK in 2007 and in this country in 2008. And so I wanted to take Sacred Demise further and offer a series of tools that people could use to prepare emotionally and spiritually. So in 2011, I published Navigating the Coming Chaos, a handbook for inner transition. And I was particularly fascinated with five emotions that I believe people are going to feel increasingly in the demise. And those are fear, grief, anger, despair, and joy. And I'll say a little bit about all of those. I was deeply influenced by the writings of a fabulous psychologist in the Boston area, Miriam Greenspan, who wrote Healing Through the Dark Emotions. And what I loved about the title is the preposition through. Because again, hearkening back to Carl Jung, my experience was that the way out is through, not around or above or below our suffering, but through it. So Navigating the Coming Chaos offers a toolbox for dealing with the big five emotions of the, what some people call the long emergency. And of course, joy is one of the big five because throughout the book and in my work, I emphasize the importance of creating and experiencing joy in our lives, not only to counterbalance the losses of the unraveling, but to inspire us as we create a new culture, a new way of living on this planet, a new way of being human.
Okay, my final question. In the past, I've brought a variety of guests on this program who've looked at our human predicament, especially in the context of uncontrollable climate and environmental changes, and who envision a new kind of social order that humanity seems to be transitioning towards. You wouldn't know this from the mainstream media, but it's happening. We see this in many different peripheral movements that are gaining ground. You called it the transitional culture, local and slow food movements, slow money and local bartering currencies. And there is the E.F. Schumacher's small is beautiful perspective. And, of course, there is the gradual exodus from large urban areas and a return to nature and the land to become more self-sufficient. So I'd like you to share what you foresee as the condition that industrial civilization is transitioning towards, and what are the most critical things people need to do to be there together? You only have about 2.5 minutes.
Okay. One of my favorite people these days is a guy named Brian Swim, who's a mathematical cosmologist in California. He's a student of the late Thomas Berry, and he's really put together a lot of Berry's work in terms of, you know, the scientific basis and really a marriage of spirituality and science. You know, we are being compelled by nature, by science, to move on. All the structures that are destroying the earth are collapsing, and they're releasing us into the essential nature of who we are. So, you know, I am encouraging people to really move into a place, in addition to all that they do in their external lives, is to move into a place of spiritual practice, reflection, contemplation, and looking at, you know, the question, who do I want to be in this unraveling? And what did I come here to do? I do a lot of life coaching with people to help them kind of sort this out. You know, maybe there's an opportunity for you to do something that you never thought you could do to really make a difference as we move into this place. And, you know, not to think that you can do any of this on your own. You need a support system. You need to get involved with groups like Transition. We need to be working together in preparing for the future, much of which is very uncertain. Some of it we know what we're preparing for, some of it we don't.
I fully agree with that. It is the we in the future, not the I from the past. Carolyn, thank you for coming on. I appreciate it. Carolyn Baker. And your website, Carolyn?
Carolyn at carolynbaker.net. And if you want to email me about any of these things, it's Carolyn at carolynbaker.net.
And the book is Navigating the Coming Chaos. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Gary Noll, and that brings us up to the end of this program. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now we go to the final segment of our program, heard over the internet and by telephone, and that is called Talk Back. Your opportunity to call in and share your comments and thoughts and questions about any issue that you find important. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Luann Panessi's on hold. Let's go to Luann. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Just to add to something that you mentioned earlier in the show about how the FDA is in fact a business, several of your listeners have emailed me over the past couple of weeks, and they mentioned that now the FDA is actually taking things like vitamins and trying to make them into medications with side effects and putting them in the drug books. They make them synthetically. One patient came to me and was taking a crazy name drug. They're calling it a drug. And it was folic acid and B12 and pyridoxine. And they're calling it Falone in a lab or some crap. Anyway, what's interesting is that they're saying they've done it with fish oil. They've done it with a lot of our vitamins. And they're turning them into what they call, under their umbrella of drugs. And how ridiculous this appears to people who are taking, you know, natural vitamins. And so just a little addition to that. It's getting to be absurd. And yet, if people don't see the absurdity, they don't perceive it as such. But I'll bet your audience sure does.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Did you want to comment on that or no?
No, it's self. There is no need for a comment.
Okay. I have someone here who says that I was wondering if you can speak to Gary about supplements like conjugated linoleic acid, flax, and other liquids. Most of the capsules contain gelatin, and the public has no idea what the contents of the gelatin are. Would you be able to discuss this with your audience? I think we would appreciate it.
All that's necessary is for individuals to look at the label and see, is it a vegan gelatin? It is made from seaweed. And that's how vegan capsules are made. Or is it one made from cowhide? It's that simple. If it's not vegan, it's made from animals. Let's say hello to Kathy from Nebraska. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Gary. I have a question about wind energy. I live in a small town where they're considering the development of wind turbines.
Where are you at? What town?
Fairbury.
Okay. And how close to the town do they want to put their wind turbines?
Well, they haven't been clear on that. They say Highway 136, which I happen to live on, and then a town called Steel City.
And exactly what are they offering you?
They're offering the town, you know, probably several millions in taxes. And
okay, the town will never see this money. You have to understand that much like the gas hydrofrackers who come in and buy up oil leases for just pennies on the dollar, the wind industry has done the same thing. And the actual examination of how much money comes back to the community, either as jobs, as taxes, it's like 1%. So economically, you're not going to benefit. Secondly, there's not going to be the jobs there. They come in, and you have to have highly skilled people, and all these turbines and the wings, the blades, are all made frequently in China or other places, so you're not going to get a local industry that benefits from this. Third, you have the environmental impact. These are very noisy. They're on 24/7. They can block the sun in many areas. They kill birds, especially birds that are flying and don't see them. And they do produce electricity, but not enough to justify them. The only place these wind turbines, in my opinion, should be in non-residential or living areas, out in the ocean, in the Great Divide in Colorado, up in the mountains, and in Arizona, up high, north of Flagstaff in the high mountains. That way, we would be able to benefit from the wind, but we'd have no downside. You have an enormous amount of downside. You live within distance. There's a high probability you're going to end up with headaches, dizziness, and insomnia. And once they're up, and they're sometimes 400 or 500 feet high, they're not coming down. Okay? So you don't want to get involved. All right? All the best to you in Nebraska. Carl from Los Angeles. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Gary. Forgive me if you've covered this, but did you happen to see the 60-minute segment on Sunday talking about the suicidal deaths of many of our veterans that are coming back from war?
I did, and I'm encouraged that they even talk about it, but I'm discouraged because just like the shootings, they all blame the guns, and they never blame the meds, which virtually all the shooters were on. They never talk about the type of antipsychotic medication or antidepressant medication that these vets are on, sometimes multiple ones, and the side effects are known to be suicide.
I caught that too, and they only fleetingly said that they adjusted their prescriptions, and that was the only reference to meds that I caught in that story.
Well, that's like saying the man was stabbed in the back, the stabber adjusted the knife to go slightly left rather than full left. These are all bad to the bone meds. I am right now in the process of completing a veteran's village. It will be the first in the world. It's on my own dime, on my own time, and I'll be working with vets there to reverse them off these meds, get them out of post-traumatic stress disorder mindsets and get them back. Hopefully, if this works, and we'll know within 6 months, then that could be used by other organizations, nonprofit organizations and vet groups to say, hey, we got something better than the meds you're giving us. Because everything the VA is doing when it comes to treating vets for post-traumatic stress or Gulf War syndrome, they're doing wrong, and therefore it's a shame on 60 Minutes for not seeing that. Thanks a lot, Carl, for your call. And last call, Al from Long Island. Hi, Al.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
Good.
I'm just wondering, I've seen a lot of reports about Iran and Israel in the news, and how Obama is supposedly not bluffing about disarming Iran. And I just saw Netanyahu speak a few days ago. I was wondering what your thoughts were on, I guess, the possibility of a World War III.
I don't see this as a possibility. I see it as an inevitability. You have to go back and be a student of how we condition the public to accept that the war is not only inevitable, it is necessary in order to protect the interest of the United States or our most valued allies. The fact that the people running the Israeli government are psychopaths, and this will cause a world war, but it will not be a military war. Understand that, Al, and the people in this audience. This will be an economic war, and we will lose it because we'll be going up against China, India, Russia, Brazil, and 22 other countries that are now using, most of them, our currency. The dollar is a reserve currency. They'll stop that. And then you'll start seeing the consequences of when people were looking at how we cannot stop ourselves from our compulsion to invade, destroy, all because of the military-industrial subcontractors who control the foreign policy of the United States. Okay, it will not be a major war, but it will be major in the consequences to our domestic lifestyle. And it's almost inevitable. Thanks a lot for your call. Now let's go over and say hello to Utrice Lise, who's standing by. Hi, Utrice.
Hello, Gary. Today we have open forums because we didn't have enough time to accommodate questions and comments yesterday. And we will also do a special recording of how Hugo Chavez basically related to the poor in the Caribbean in particular.
Great. Well, we look forward to it. Utrice Lee, coming in just a moment on Progressive Radio Network.
Get out of that bed. Wash your face and hands. Get out of that bed.
This is Karen Hartglass, host of It's All About